countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, hey! It is now time for more of the last comic shop!
That's right. We are uncorking the genie bottle, opening up the shop to newbies to help them find their way underneath the big comic book tent.
That's right. We're making all your wishes come true, oldie moldies, by talking about comic books that you might have skipped or might not have heard about or might have just walked on by.
She was so pretty, too. Man, Barbara Eden. Man, what a babe. What a babe.
No belly button.
Belly button was censored. Can't do that on TV.
Gotta leave something to the imagination.
That is true. With an outfit like that, I needed to cover something, I guess. Any case, we're covering comic books here at the Last Comic Shop, and I'm the host with the most, Danny Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith and Jay Scott, and welcome back to another week of a review of a comic book that we read during the other days of this week, and then decided to get together and say, like, hey, did you like it? Did you not like it?
Oh, come on, man. I've been waiting a year and a half to talk about this book.
By the way, the book we're talking about is 8 Billion Genies by Charles Soule and Ryan Brown. And it's been optioned for a television show or something like that. Have you heard anything further about that?
This is something I probably should have researched. But if memory serves, it was optioned by Amazon for some sort of television production, some streaming production. And it actually was optioned, I want to say, between issues 2 and 3. So it had barely been on the shelves. And then Amazon's like, we'll take that, please. And all of a sudden, issues got hard to find.
You know, it's in turnaround now. It's in turnaround.
But you're right. Absolutely. I think there was like a second printing of issue 1 and a third printing. And it was hotcakes for a little while there, you know, during all the speculators were snagging it up because it was going to be the focus of a show. And it's the focus of our show this week. And speaking of focusing on genies and kind of the main theme of this week's book, talking about wishes, I thought that I would pose this question to my good friends, J.A. and Chad, in regards to wishes and comic books. Because I'm sure that there have been times where we've said, oh, man, I wish they would do that. Or, oh, why don't they do that with some of our favorite funny book characters? And like, I guess, as we'll talk about in today's show, sometimes the bigger the wish gets, the more far-reaching consequences it has. So I was just wondering whether or not Jay and Chad had small wishes when it came to comics or big wishes when it came to comics. But let's get those wishes out there and see if some of our fans have similar wishes. We'll start off with Chad, because I'm sure Chad does have a wish or two in his back pocket that he would love to grant to all those comic book fans out there.
Okay, allow me to explain. One of the things that it's always gotten my goat about modern comics is the coloring. Starting in the Image era, when everybody, they went away from the old trashy newsprint paper and the four color. I am not a fan of what has happened as a result of that thing. So initially, my first draft of the wish was going to be to be able to get all comics back on that trashy paper with the four print color. But then, it gets deeper, my friends. I may or may not have mentioned on the show a few times my affection for the art of one Robert Liefeld. Now, the hardcore Rob Liefeld fans know that he has been publishing his own book through his Whatnot streams. It's called Last Blood, and he'll come up with different versions, different color covers, and that sort of thing. But one of the gimmicks that he did early on was he took this book and changed it. So instead of it being colored in the traditional way that books have been colored since the 90s, he made a manga version, right? Like a manga digest.
So not colored.
It's, you know, black, white, and gray. But they also incorporated the speed lines and like those impact lines and all those little effects you would get in a traditional manga book. And let me tell you, like I've said before on the show, I'm not the biggest manga guy. I loved it. I thought there are few artists out there whose art would be as benefited from speed lines as Rob Liefeld. And so that factored into my wish as well. So I'm not just going to wish for the four color process to come back. I'm not just going to wish for manga versions. I'm going to wish for options. So comic companies love to put out variant covers. So what I say, every time you have a variant cover, you have a different color option on the inside.
Ooh.
So you could have the traditional modern coloring for your main book. And then for your first variant cover, you get the trashy paper and the four color process. For your third variant cover, you get the manga gray tones. For your fifth variant cover, you get the black and white artist edition, where you see all the paste ups and where they put the tape in. I eventually get down to, you know, kids with crayons. And but for every variant cover, I want a different color option inside the book.
Yeah. Just speaking of, like, again, the genie and the intent, like in this book, one of the things that I feel like might be a problem for some folks is if they really like the cover and want to buy the book because of that particular variant cover. But then they're like, no, I didn't want the manga in that. I wanted the four color in that. It's like, I don't know, going to buffet and like being like, well, you can get one of these main courses and then two sides, but you can only pick off of this menu for the sides. I don't know. I think it might get dangerous.
Not if you consider my wish, which will piggyback quite nicely off of Chad's wish and turn that buffet option into a golden corral, if you will.
Ooh.
I'm just going by the amount of options.
Or the toughness of the employees. I've seen them like throw chairs at people. Mess stuff up.
K.O.
So explain.
The best era of comic books was when you could go into a comic book shop with a $5 bill and walk out with five comic books.
Loving it.
So my wish, which would not impact the writers or the artists or the people making the book, somehow the economics would work out on the other end. But for the consumer, a comic book would cost you a dollar.
Wow.
I guess are they still a 99¢ for an iTunes song, or am I also dating myself on that one too?
I don't know if iTunes is still a thing, is it?
Last I heard, some of the songs were like $1.29, but I might be dating myself too.
Yeah.
But wow, a dollar! That would definitely bring it back to like, this is a disposable medium that you just buy tons of comic books every week.
How much fun do you guys have buying dollar bin books?
Oh, I love it.
Well, there you go. Everything's a dollar bin now.
That would be delightful. I was going to say, you know how I can tell that inflation is a serious thing? I was looking the other day. Matchbox cars at my local Walmart were like $1.18. Matchbox cars have been 99¢. For as long as I can remember, I couldn't believe they were over a dollar.
You have to go buy the off-brand Matchbox cars at the dollar store now. Now you have to go with the Japanese company that makes the like super.
All right, we're not talking about wishes on Matchbox cars. Come on, guys. So we've got variant covers with variant coloring inside. We've got all of these comic books worth a dollar. Boy, you guys are going like whole hog on like changing entire industries here.
All right, but we haven't heard from you yet.
You're right, because I'm going small scale. I guess I don't know if it's small scale, because I think it has some massive repercussions for comics history. When I think about if I could change one thing and I could have my one wish, it's pretty simple. I want Captain Marvel, Shazam, to be a Marvel character. And have always been a Marvel character, at least since, like, maybe the 1970s. So remember back in the day, for all you comic book fans out there, you know, we've talked about this on previous occasions. Originally, it was a Fawcett character. DC took them to court. They found it was too much like Superman, and so they basically, DC put him out of business, right? And so, like, Shazam was dead for years. Years And so, like, in the interim, Marvel came up with their own Captain Marvel. It was Mar-Vell and all this other stuff. Well, let's just change the history. What if Marvel had gotten Captain Marvel? So that Marvel had their Superman character, would anchor a lot of teams like the Avengers. I feel like could be the big red cheese, could be one of their big head honchos. I mentioned it before. I think that character fits within the Marvel method of making superheroes. He's a, you know, when he's not Captain Marvel, he's a kid, teenage problems and stuff, then turns into super powerful Captain Marvel. I think it's a winning combination. And of course, nowadays, like, Captain Marvel always gets crapped upon because he's looked at as the inferior version of Superman. Whereas at Marvel, he would just be the Superman that they have.
He'd be the inferior version of Hyperion, then?
I mean, I guess my wish has massive repercussions, too, because if you think about Shazam coming into Marvel in the 70s and being a part of the Marvel universe since the 70s.
Yeah, you're taking one of the only good DCEU films away from them, giving it back to Marvel.
That's true. As I said, massive repercussions, but it's smaller scale. It's not like a dollar a book. It's not coloring. It's taking a character that really should belong at the other company and giving it to them. That's my wish. Shazam!
Give it to you. Shazam!
I guess in defense of your wish, the second Shazam movie totally fits into the current milieu of MCU stuff.
Right. No, it wasn't that bad. It just wasn't good.
No, it wasn't horrible. But one thing that wasn't horrible was our wishes. Hopefully everybody out there in Last Comic Shop Land enjoyed our wishes. Which one was your favorite? Make sure that you're getting out on Threads this week. We're going to have all three choices. Who gets the most votes out of JA or me or Chad? Or maybe you'll give your own wish for how you would change comic books.
That's right. Where's our idea men with their 3D glasses?
They're coming up in our read pile review of 8 Billion Genies right after this.
BCWSupplies.com has everything a comic collector could need. Boards, bags, long boxes, and so much else for our ever-so-increasing collections. And you can save 10% on your total order by using promo code LCSPOD at checkout. Not only does this take 10% off BCW Supplies' already low prices, but it supports my favorite podcast, The Last Comic Shop. So get all your collecting gear at bcwsupplies.com and save 10% on your order with promo code LCSPOD at checkout. That's LCSPOD at checkout. Happy hunting!
Bonjour! This is Geek Yo Hog, and I've got a nice little YouTube channel where I review the latest comics and occasionally bang on about the old ones. Ah, why should you bother? I hear you cry. Well, I'm a published writer of comics. I had 6 shops back in the day, and I've been a collector for 50 years. Yeah, that's why there's an O and an L in the middle of Geeky and Hog. I'm clever like that. So, if you fancy it, reviewing the new ones weekly and then looking at artists and stuff, you know, on the side, as the actress said to the bishop, everyone is welcome. Geeky Old Hog, all one word, over on YouTube.
And we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for our read pile review. Yes, that time of every single show where you wish that we had more comic books to read, right? Absolutely. Yeah, you wish that all the time because that gives you more episodes of this show to listen to. And it gives us something to do. I don't know what Chad and J.A. and I would do if we didn't have this show and comic books to read. It's such a part of our lives over the past 4 years.
That's right. Have free time.
Any case. Yeah, we're going to be reading 8 Billion Genies this week. And the primary creative force behind this wonderful book was Charles Soule, who did most of the writing, if not all the writing, I think. And Ryan Brown, who did the arting and drawing and stuff, with Kevin Knipstein and Chris Crank. And I was really excited to read this particular book just simply because I've read some other stuff that Charles Soule and Ryan Brown have done. I've known Ryan Brown's work since he was on God Hates Astronauts way back in the day. That's almost like a decade old at this point. And Charles Soule, he's had some interesting runs on Star Wars that I've read. He also had a run on Daredevil. I didn't read that, but Chad did.
I hated it. It was the worst. I feel badly. No, it did not speak to me. Like, and Daredevil's one of those characters where traditionally Marvel let the creators take him their own way. And Charles Soule's run, they tried to introduce this sidekick. He had this one villain, Ten Fingers, who had ten fingers. It was real dumb. They did the death of Daredevil where he gets hit by a car, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Like, well, as I said, he's been instrumental with a lot of really great Star Wars stories over the past couple of years. He wrote a great series, the Darth Vader, right after he becomes Darth Vader, and he fights this wizard guy with a beard. It was a super cool series, I thought, for a little while. And he did all of the stuff that's supposed to happen between, like, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with, you know, Luke Skywalker getting a gold lightsaber or a yellow lightsaber. Whatever. It was good stuff.
I've read a couple issues of the Star Wars stuff. It was very good.
Yeah, so I was excited to read 8 Billion Genies. And speaking of reading it, I don't have to synopsisize it because I just gave the creators. That's Chad and J.A.'s job. So they're going to tag team on this 10-cent synopsis. So wish fulfilled, guys. What is that 10-cent synopsis?
And it was an 8-issue miniseries. It came out, I want to say, circa 2022. Throughout 2022, 2023. And like we said, it was optioned for a TV show, and so everyone went crazy between issues 1 and 2. And for me personally, it became my quest, because I had heard about it on another show that I listened to, The iFanboy, and they had recommended it. And I was like, oh, I'll pick it up if I see it. And then by the time I found the first issue, the second issue was sold out everywhere. But then I found the second issue, and the third issue came out the next day, and then that was sold out everywhere. And, like, every issue was a constant quest for me to track down. But that was part of the fun. Sometimes the collector aspect of comic bookery, I enjoyed that just as much as the comic books. Oh, but I didn't synopsize, did I?
Not really.
That's no, okay. All right. Okay, so the premise is actually delightfully simple. At the point when society reaches 8 billion people, everyone gets a genie, and that genie will grant one wish. Okay. And the way the issues are laid out, it's, the first issue is the first 8 seconds. The second issue is after 8 hours. The third issue is after 8 days, and so on and so forth. You know, days beget years, beget decades, beget centuries, and all that other fun stuff. It starts off in this bar, and there's this band. They're called the Bada Bangs. And there's three folks in that one. It's Brian, Daisy, and Alex. Daisy's the lady in that one. There is a drunk dad whose name's Ed, and his son Robbie. And then the bartender is a dude named Will Williams. And eventually they're joined by Li Feng and Zheng Wang. Those folks are joined by their eventual daughter, Betty, as they were pregnant at the time. But anyway, when everybody gets a genie, and this is mild spoilers for the first issue, the bartender uses his wish immediately to say that no wishes can affect anyone inside his bar. So everybody inside, the world is going to be the same as it was when they entered the bar. So the internet still works. They are not affected by what goes on.
It's a safe zone.
Yes, safe haven. And so as soon as everyone looks outside and sees the madness that becomes after people have their wishes granted, all of a sudden it becomes very clear why it's important to have that safe zone. From there, some people burn their wishes very quickly and on silly decisions that backfire. Some people hold on to their wishes. Eventually, people get wish locked where they couldn't make a wish even if they tried. And then you get to the point where big corporations start taking over. And it's like, well, in exchange for a wish, you'll be allowed to enter into this haven under the properties of this, this, and that. And, you know, they're taking the wishes from people and then using that to turn around and fortify their own corporate utopias there. I'm not doing the book nearly enough justice because every issue is filled with crazy, imaginative goings-on. You have dinosaurs, you have mech suits, you have people trying to cross strange lands and armor that's ever-changing. crossovers and backstabbing and just absolute madness the entire way until the book reaches its end. And it's one of the few books out there that I think was it's solid from start to finish. And I don't want to give too much away about the ending, but it wraps up itself in a nice little bow. So, Jay, what did I leave out?
The fact that they also have this running count of the population just going down, down very quickly, both in terms of people and genies.
Yeah. Plus the fact that, like, everybody only gets one wish, because I think that's an important factor in this. Because ultimately, you know, unlike a lot of the traditional, you know, myths and stories that we hear about genies, everybody gets three wishes. And they nip that in the bud right away by saying, like, oh, no. That would get really complicated real fast when you had 8 billion people. 8 billion single wishes is enough.
Everyone on Earth gets a monkey paw.
And the genies will tell them, like, it depends on your intent when you're making the wish. Like, they basically reserve the right to mess around with you.
Yes, like all the countries in the world, the presidents and whatnot, they all wish that their country is the most supreme and the best at everything. And the genies went, well, everyone was wishing for the same thing, so we just kind of canceled all those wishes out.
Yeah. There's a lot of actual rules in this kind of world that Charles Soule and Ryan Brown set up. I think that was one of the most interesting aspects of the whole wish granting scenario, is that the fact that you have these genies who try to deliver, again, the intent of the wish, which is different than some, again, other stories and myths about, you know, sometimes you get benevolent genies, other times you get like the monkey's paw where there's always a twist. These ones are neither good nor bad. It's really the intention of the folks that are wishing. And sometimes there are still unintended consequences for that. It's kind of more of a discussion about people's potential. I thought that I that's the way I looked at it.
And the fact that humanity, when given the chance, will tend to disappoint a lot of the time.
I loved it. Well, hold on. Let's just spoiler alert ahead. Let's spoil some of the dumbest wishes. Like the very first wish. One of the people in the band wishes that one of the other people in the band would fall in love with them. But the problem is that person that's in the band, the other person in the band, is inside the bar. And so that wish doesn't take. And so when they go back in, they're like, aren't you having feelings for me? Like, no, I'm not. And that's gross. You're trying to take away my free will. The other one I loved was the parent that has like 8 to 10 kids that as soon as they figure out what's happening, they like run upstairs and they use their wish like any of my children's wishes have to be approved by me. Kids will wish for stupid stuff. And you just see the kids sitting in their mound of stuffed animal toys. And, you know, that was awesome.
And the moon is eating people.
Yeah. What's that? The movie where the moon is, you know, gets shot in the eye with the rocket. Is it Fellini?
No, Millier.
We get a Millier moon.
This one is a little bit sadder, but there was that woman who wished to be all of the ocean, one with the ocean, and then she's like this giant octopusy ocean thingy, and she's like, just come down. Your suit will help you survive. I'm so lonely down here. It's so beautiful, and I can't share it with anybody. So it was funny, but there's a lot of pathos in that, too, as well.
Absolutely. And this book, it reminded me of Chew a little bit, where there are certain pages where you can look out into the background and see 100 ideas on a page through these wishes. You know, whether it's the people in the alien-style mech suits and they're flying cars, and they're going up against the people on the unicorns in the air, past the rockets, past the superheroes. How sad is it when the one superhero gets all messed up and he's like, oh, I'm only 12, and the other superhero's like, I was only 11.
But that was the thing. This story for me initially started off a little bit slow, I won't lie. Was struggling a little bit with the first issue. But it really wasn't until, as people hung on to their wishes, how those wishes change and evolve. And like the stages that people go through with wishes, right? I thought that was fascinating. Like, originally, people are just like, well, I'll just wish for everything. Like, I'll wish for anime babes to show up in my, you know, my room. I want to have lunch with Ernest Hemingway. And then that same person turns into gold by somebody else's wish. It wasn't until later on when you found out, I think it's after Zhang Wang makes his trip out and he gets this unbeatable armor and he comes back to the bar and he says, everybody, make sure that you're making your wishes for not the world that you knew, but the world that exists now. And it's crazy because, like, you don't really think about that. You're like, well, money doesn't have any value anymore. Like, this doesn't have any value anymore because everybody can just get those things.
Oh, there's tons of deep stuff. I loved, we talked about the process of how there's 8 billion people. Once everything restarts, there's a certain character that they get to live through that entire world and change their form. And that was fascinating, too, where they're like, oh, I spent the first couple hundred years just doing whatever I wanted. And they, you know, show them engaging all these gluttonous things. And then, you know, and then I started trying to master a craft. And they talked about how that mastering some sort of skill is like very slow magic, right? How you can mold yourself to be able to do something impressive a little bit at a time. But by the time it's over and you have that mastered skill, like, that truly is magical. There's something about devoting yourself to the craft. I love that thought of, like, the person that got to live all throughout time over and over again and experience all these different things and their perspective. And I also loved towards the end, the lawyers.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The big corporations who had stockpiled all these wishes go up against each other, and suddenly you just see wishes blowing up. And what's that mean? Does that mean they're going after our wishes and they're canceling each other out? And so you just see these wishes popping off, pop, 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 to see who's got the supreme wish arsenal. And who will come out on top is basically who has more wishes in the end.
Right. But don't forget the one guy whose wish was that people would believe in him goes up against these lawyers. They're like, well, don't you believe in me? And they're like, we're lawyers. We believe in everything and nothing at the same time. Yeah. Nothing matters.
And then his ultimate undoing is the kid who's like, but since my parents died, I don't believe in anything anymore.
Yeah. But it is fascinating world building. I mean, Charles Soule sets up so many rules for this particular universe that are very nuanced. Like the whole notion of remnants, for example, early on in the story, you find out that the drunk dad that was at the bar, he's that way because his wife passed away and the mother of his son. And so he uses his wish to bring her back to life. And the genies are nice. Like, again, it builds around intention, right? Where it's like, we didn't want to bring her back at the point in which she died, when she was, you know, stricken with disease or whatever, or some other version. We brought her back as the way she was living, as, right, as, you know, almost like this is the way that both the son and the father remember her fondly in her best self, I guess.
And they're applauding that wish and like wiping right away tears and like, oh, because that's a good one.
It was a genuinely good wish, but it has unintended consequences
because when the person who made that wish dies, then that person, that remnant, is going to disappear because they are tied to the wish maker. So you had a lot of people who wished to have a drink with Ernest Hemingway, but when that person died, he disappeared.
Yeah.
Which probably a good thing because he was a bit of an a-hole.
So long again, Lizard King.
It was one of those things where as it builds, it has impacts on later on and how other wishes are utilized. Like the Sun Man character, who's just a boy when this whole thing starts, he uses his wish, similar to some other folks, to become a superhero, to have enough power to protect both his mom and his dad. But it's all based on fear. Like, he just doesn't want to lose his mom again. So he's like, I will become more powerful so that...
I don't know if it's based on fear. I thought it was based on love. And that's why it was a good wish. It was based on love, his love for his family. But then he goes through some pretty dark stuff for a 10-year-old or 11-year-old because he's killing these people. And he doesn't know if he's killing remnants or he's killing actual people.
Right. Like, with the kaijus. You know, there's kaiju fighting in the streets and the superhero with the superhero buddies, and he's like, wait a minute, is that a monster that someone wished for? Did I just kill a person?
But you think it's from a place of love? Because, like, I thought it was out of fear. Like, he doesn't want to lose his mom again. He doesn't want to lose his dad. That's why he flies out and he eventually goes to the idea man's castle, not only because he's broken because of all these people he had to kill, but ultimately at the same time, he went there because he was afraid. He needed a safe spot. He wanted to find safety, and the Idea Man takes advantage of that.
He wanted to find a good spot, and that's why he overcomes the Idea Man's power.
And that's 12-year-old love. You know, he doesn't have romantic love. He doesn't. It's about family. It's about good. It's about altruism. It's all about all that crap we never grew out of.
That was probably my biggest takeaway from this. And maybe it's the point of this particular book that we disagree on. I thought that the issues leading up to the last issue were all about people's potential and how they're dealing with fear of the unknown, fear of change, fear of things. That's why, like, basically the genie, he wishes for the bar to be the safe spot. And that's like the surrogate home for everybody. That's the thing that you can kind of relate to. That's the home. That's where you start your life as a child and you learn certain things and then you go out into the world. And that potential is then being used. But a lot of the times that potential is used to stave off fear, whether it's like fear of other people's power, whether it's fear of people putting you down, whether it's fear of expectations, whether it's fear of being lonely or being by yourself. There's so much fear. Everybody seems to be afraid of using wishes. That's the wish lock thing. You're so afraid that you won't. Well, you wish for the wrong thing that you never use your wish in the end. Afraid of losing control. That's why somebody says, I want everybody to believe in me, because they're afraid that people won't believe in them. And it's not until the last issue, and I'm not going to give too much away, but it doesn't end up being about fear anymore. And I think that's where the powerful thing is.
I don't agree with that. I think there is some fear. I mean, there's some people who have fear and can't make wishes or make wishes out of fear. But I think there are a lot of people who are making wishes out of love too. I mean, that's what I liked about the book. It's more of a, you know, it's a nuanced take on humanity. Not everyone has the same motivations.
Right. And it's a very nuanced take on a very simple idea. And that's where the genius comes in, where, you know, someone has this idea that is instantly relatable. You know, everybody's heard about, you know, stories about genies before, but they put that interesting spin on it and play it out in a way that, you know, you're seeing the people that are benefiting from their wishes are the people whose wishes are altruistic. You know, they are the people that are trying to do the right thing, as opposed to the people that are making the selfish wishes. And you even get to watch somebody learn. You get to watch somebody who made a selfish wish come full circle. I think that's where the real magic is here. There's tons of fun. There's tons of silliness. There's tons of guys with chainsaws coming out of their hands. But then at the end of the day, it's all about love winning out.
There's a lot of wit and jokes. It's not all like heavy-handed. That's what I think what makes it such a fun read. There's a point where there are these people who are going around trying to kill people who still have wishes because they blame people with wishes sort of for destroying the world. And they shoot at a wish and the bullet goes through the wish and he's like, oh no, I'm dying. That was funny, but you're going to die.
That's it. And there's plenty of moments of satire built in. Like I love when, you know, all the world leaders are wishing for their country's dominance. It's not the world leaders wishing. It's their first generals. You know, hey, Carl, get in here. We're going to use your wish instead.
Yeah. Like,
it's that kind of stuff.
I we could talk about this because, I mean, it's bringing up some things. But I was about to challenge you guys to think of, like, because even, like, the ones that are the most altruistic, like bringing the mom back, right? That's an altruistic wish, right? He was looking out for, but he's afraid of him not being a good enough dad. Yes, there are aspects of it that are dealing with love and thinking about his child, but he's also, there's an aspect of fear in that.
Well, I think the problem with that one wasn't the fear aspect as much as life is a temporary condition.
Right.
What about the wish to make the wish tied to the three people so that they wouldn't break up the band and break up this family unit that they had become?
Oh, that's out of fear too. It was fear because they didn't want to be separated. They didn't want to
leave. It's not love because they loved each other, so they didn't want to be separated.
They also feared what would happen if you, because there's always that dichotomy with everything. Fear and love are like very closely linked. Like,
I see what you're saying.
There's an aspect of fear to all of these wishes. A little bit. Like The Fun City said, we will not take you. We will not take you. We will not take her. And they were like, well, the only reason we're getting in is because we have wishes. Well, we'll make it sure that we can bring this person along because we do not want to leave her behind. We are afraid of leaving her behind. So we're going
to
bring her with us.
No, that it was her dream to be in Fun City.
It was a sacrifice that they sacrificed one of their two remaining wishes to make happen. Like, that's an altruistic sacrifice.
But I guess you're not seeing what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying in the fact that, like, these people have been together so long and they perfected things, and, like, a future without one of them, they would fear that.
Well, yeah.
That's reasonable, but that, like, any decision, you know.
Has an aspect of fear to it.
Yeah, there's balance in the force.
Right.
So the genie's wish to protect the people in the bar, was that?
It was fear-based because, again, he was afraid of what would happen to those people in that bar. He wanted to give them a safe place. Sure, again, altruistic, but he was afraid of what might happen to them, and rightfully so. I mean, why...
If you're going to use that, and then you could say the last wish was where she wished for everyone to have love because she was afraid of what the world would be like without love. It's just sophistry.
I disagree. I feel like the last wish was the only one that didn't have any aspect of that because I think she had conquered everything. That's why her wish was the best.
Well, she's old as Yoda, so yeah, she's got some...
She did not conquer Vlad the Impaler, a.k.a. her bartender.
She didn't.
I love that scene. It's like, I think that's where all that Dracula stuff came from.
That's true. The heads. That was like the darkest issue. Like the whole notion that he brought like bubonic plague because he's like, I got to slow things down a little bit.
Yeah.
I was and like, son of a gun. That is cold blooded.
Yeah. It takes a great writer to consider. Like, I love the idea that the genie is there and he's watching. And he's like, yeah, the first little bit is just going to be chaos. Just stay inside. And he's like, after chaos, then you get the big players trying to mess around, you know, and it goes in cycles. And like, he's seen it before. And so he understands what the cycles are. And then after a while, he's like, okay, it's probably safe to go out.
Yeah, when they finally restore the earth after the big scour, which burns off and kills, you know, a couple billion, they restore the earth to some sort of natural, he opens the doors. Well, it's about time. Because you figure the air inside that bar has got to be pretty rank by now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, some deep stuff going on in the last comic shop today with this particular book, but it's time to kind of get to rating. So we'll be right back after these commercial breaks with that, as well as some quick recommendations of other books you can pick up at your local comic book shop this week.
When you're done listening to this podcast, check out mine. My name is Dave, and I'm the host of Beer in Front. My podcast is just enjoying the beer that's in front of you. Sometimes we forget about a classic beer while we focus on the new trendy thing. What I try to do each week is to enjoy an old school classic or have a beer that has potential to be a classic. I'll also talk about events of the day, I'll add my spin to things, and each week there are people that really annoy me, and I'll call them out as the jagoff of the week. That's Beer in Front, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
LastComicShopPodcast.com is the destination for all things shop. Plan your week with upcoming show schedules, the latest books, recommendations, and chatter from the crew. Subscribe to the show on all major podcasting platforms from one convenient location. Show your support and browse the merch store. T-shirts, tanks, hoodies for the fam, coffee mugs, magnets, totes, and more. Check out exclusive content through the show's YouTube channel and follow the pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and others. All this and so much more at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
All right, we're back with more Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for ratings. That time of every single show where we have the unenviable task of rating a book that is kind of deep, multi-layered for sure. Again, somebody spent a lot of time thinking about and crafting really, really well. But we still have to give it a 1 out of 4 scale. So, J.A., what's our 1 out of 4 scale this week?
Well, even though you only get one wish, in the book, 8 Billion Genies, you get 1 out of 4 wishes in this reality.
Well, I think I'm going to go first. I hope that some folks got what I was laying down a little bit there. It was a big world out there. A lot of scary stuff was happening after people started making wishes. And a lot of what ultimately ended up being a part of that was the notion of dealing with fear, dealing with uncertainty, dealing with this ever-changing universe. And I think that's why this book is one that a lot of folks, I feel like, will find something to talk about with their friends after reading, because I don't think it even has to do with wishes. I think it, again, I'm going back to my whole notion of human potential. Like, if you had the ability to do whatever you wanted and be whoever you wanted, which everybody has inside of them, what would you do with that power? Because we all have it. You can do things for good or bad or whatever. And I think Charles Soule taps into a little bit of that. And I love how it's, you know, the people that you meet along the way and the journeys that you take. And I love how the fact that the more and more people hang on to their wishes, the more those genies become inseparable from the people that they're with. They're like their conscience. They're their, you know, their spirit guide, their whatever you want to call it, to the point where when finally some of them make their wishes, it's those genies know them pretty damn well. For good and or for bad. And so I thought that was a really fascinating part of this book. I will, though, not give it a 4. I think I'm going to give it a 3.5. As much as I like Ryan Brown's art, there were some times when it wasn't my favorite art. And maybe it just wasn't for me. And the other thing that I'm going to kind of say is that I actually wasn't a huge fan of the ending. I thought that the ending seemed a little bit rushed. I feel like maybe I would have loved to seen like issue 9 or 10. I feel like they had to wrap up things real fast in issue 8. But it's still a book I would highly recommend anybody read, especially long before they put out the TV show. J.A.
Yeah, to me it's a 3.5 too. And 3.5 is a really good grade, by the way. And I think we're getting some grade inflation sometimes. Like 4 books should be rare and maybe not, because we read a lot of good books on this show. What I love is, especially in this day and age where we've been nostalgic to death with our pop culture, it's nice to read something that is so fresh, imaginative, and different, as opposed to something that's just a retread of a retread of a sequel of a retread. I didn't really have a problem so much with the art. I did think at sometimes the story got maybe a little too cute, or they quickly moved through sections where I wish they could have paused for a little bit longer and explored that one or two aspects. So I can see where you're saying that you felt it wrapped up very quickly. I would have liked for that in that final issue for Betty and Daisy to have a little bit more interaction. They had a couple of pages where they sort of chewed nails and then suddenly they were not chewing nails. But it felt very quick from Betty to go from a tattoo full of kills to giving up her wish completely. So I could see what you're saying with that, Andrew. But wow, just a breath of fresh air and highly recommended.
All right. I will echo a lot of what's been said. I would not confess to be a giant Ryan Brown fan. I thought sometimes the art came across as a little amateurish. And so there are probably 100 other artists I would wish before Ryan brought on this book. I could also see the arguments with the ending. I don't know if rushed is the right way I would look at it. I do think it was a little bit saccharine, where it's like they were going to come up with that sweet ending.
Yeah, it's no Asterius polyp ending, which is, has the great meteorite or asteroid or whatever.
Yeah.
It is. What is it when it in the atmosphere? Is that a meteorite?
That's a meteorite. It's a meteor when it's outside, but it's a meteorite.
What about a meteoroid? When is it a meteoroid?
I don't know. I think that's a word you came up with.
You're thinking of asteroids.
I'm thinking of asteroid, yeah.
That's a great video game. Anyways, Chad.
The people that named it hemorrhoids really missed the boat.
Uh-huh.
There we go. All right. So there you go. Well, that's okay. I can transition from that, because with all these criticisms I have of this book, and sure, sometimes it went out of its way to be silly, and sure, the art wasn't always what I would have picked. At the end of the day, much like a meteoroid, right? It lands, right? The story lands. I thought at the end of the day, this was that magic alchemy of a great idea. You know, is it the most brilliant book that I've read? No, but was it a damn good book? Absolutely. I love the ideas. I love the exploration. I love the conversation we've been able to have as a result of this book. I love wandering around for the last week thinking about, oh man, what do you think that guy's wish would be? What would my wish be? What is, you know, like, it's just so fun and simple to play with, and those are the best things. And so, with all the complaints that I have, I wouldn't wish this to be anything different. Screw you guys, it's a 4.
There you go! Good for you and your pick this week.
No, I really enjoyed it. I thought it, you know, you don't get books like this all the time. I thought this was on the level of a Day Tripper, or not quite a Serious Polyp, but it's worthy of a 4.
Okay. Well, here's hoping that we'll find some other 4s among our recommendations. Yes, these are other comic books that you may check out at your local comic book shop this week, in addition to getting 8 Billion Genies and some of the awesome collections that are already put out. And in particular, we read Deluxe Edition on this particular week's episode. But if you can find some of those issues, snag them up for that Amazon Prime show hits, because I feel like this show may translate pretty well into a TV show. To Jay's point, there's not a lot of original ideas out there. This is an original idea. This is a good idea. I feel like people are going to mind that.
And the visuals. We didn't talk about the visuals at all. The way the genies look with that space background. Like, if they can find a way to translate that visually on the screen, like, that alone is going to sell a million t-shirts.
Yeah. Well, here's some things that we're hoping sell a million copies among our Last Comic Shop fans. J.A., what is your recommendation this week?
So I am going back to the well. Last year, I recommended Barnstormers, which was at the time a Comixology original series by Scott Snyder and Tulu Tea. And I'm recommending another Comixology original because I think they sometimes are often overlooked as sort of cheap imitation, maybe, of independent comic books when there is a lot of good stuff coming out of the Comixology imprint. The one I'm recommending is called Clear, also by Scott Snyder and Francis Manupal, and it is set in a dystopian future where people buy veils to see the world how they want to see them. But there's this dark market, because anytime you're selling people what they want to see, of course there's going to be, you know, it's going to be exploited by this dark underground. And the main character is your classic jaded noir detective who doesn't need a veil to see the world how it really is. So he is clear. He sees it with clear eyes. And he's going around trying to figure out what's going on in this world and stop the bad guys. So it's very much sort of a Blade Runner, sci-fi, future noir, cyberpunk. So if you like Blade Runner, if you like The Matrix, I highly recommend this.
Very cool. That reminds me of that Marcos Martín book we read.
Oh, yeah, and The Private Eye.
And Brian K. Vaughan. But that was a book, as much as I enjoyed it, I don't know if it totally stuck.
Yeah.
On that one.
No, absolutely. But I'm curious. Scott Snyder's been writing a lot of good stuff over the last 10, 15 years. So I'll definitely be checking that out. Speaking of comic books that kind of harken back to previous episodes of The Last Comic Shop, on a previous episode, we got to talk to Tom Pyer, who is the editor-in-chief over there at Ahoy Comics. He's not only the editor-in-chief, but he's also a wonderful writer and got one of his wishes kind of sort of fulfilled when he got to do a series called The Wrong Earth, which is pretty much, I don't want to say an homage or inspired by the wonderful Adam West version of Batman from the 66 TV show. And Tom Pyer is a huge fan of Batman 66. And so again, wish granted that he got to write that amazing story about how if you had the dark and gritty superhero meeting the campy 60s version of the superhero, and they swap places in the different worlds. But that made me curious to read more from Tom Pyer and this whole Wrong Earth universe featuring the Dragonfly. So I checked out the second sequel series, The Wrong Earth Night and Day, which again came out from Ahoy Comics, again done with Jamal Engel on art. Unlike the previous ones where the two Dragonfly characters swap universes and see what it's like to live in somebody else's shoes, they end up in a third universe together, where they find out that that universe has been pumping toxic chemicals into their universes. Like, there's these magic mirrors that allow you to transfer between one universe and another, and they put them over factories to put all the smog into, you know, Earth Alpha, and then all the bad water goes in Earth Omega, so it keeps this Earth Zeta very clean. And so the two dragonflies team up to try to stop this, and they meet a third dragonfly from that universe, and it's a lot of fun. Great classic comic booking, dealing with alternate universes and the differences between certain characters, which I don't think they talk about enough. Kind of more like Across the Spider-Verse, where you have all different kinds of Spider-Mans that come from different backgrounds and stuff. And that's what you get with The Wrong Earth, especially in this particular book, and how they would interact with each other. So it's super cool. Check it out. You can get it in trade. You can get it in single issues. The Wrong Earth, Night and Day. I think they're going to be coming out with a third one. There's definitely a cliffhanger at the end of this one, so I'm hoping. Chad.
Okay, so I was texting Andy earlier today where it's like, I genuinely don't know what my recommendation is going to be for tonight, because I was trying to think of something, you know, magical, something to pair with the 8 Billion Genies out of Image, where, you know, I just thought at the end of the day, it was perfect for what it was. Like, I wouldn't wish it any different. And lo and behold, a genie appeared and upon my doorstep left me some magic. Daredevil Born Again, the gallery edition by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli. Which we had mentioned Mazzucchelli's Asterius Polyp earlier today, too. But this book is a wish come true. It is Daredevil Born Again. It is embiggened and the gallery edition size. So this is a little bit taller, but probably as wide as the old school Treasury format. And it is that beautiful Mazzucchelli art that whenever I first encountered it as a kid, I didn't know why I liked it so much. But it turns out it's because it's so darn good. And this story is one of the best Daredevil stories that you're ever going to see. And so to have it embiggened, you know, to have those Ben Urich moments, to have the cruelty of the Kingpin on that larger scale, to have Nurse Ratchet and Nuke, and just, oh, it's the best of comic books, and it's in that larger format. Is it perfect? No. The coloring is more like the coloring you see in the current omnibus editions. I'd much rather it be more of like that Tatian style. It reflects more of the four color format of the original issues. But as far as comic books go, you would be hard pressed to find more magic than that which is contained within Daredevil Born Again. So get it now before Daredevil hits Disney Plus again with that round of Born Again storytelling, and get yourself caught up on one of the best Daredevil stories out there.
Does the Kingpin need to be embiggened? Because isn't he not embiggened enough?
There's no fat shaming on this show. Come on now.
If you've ever seen the Frank Miller, Bill Sienkiewicz Kingpin, you know the Kingpin cannot be embiggened enough. He always gets bigger.
But yeah, no, I'm glad he recommended that, because a genie popped up on my doorstep and left me the same book. So I will also be enjoying that gallery edition.
Oh
my.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out that when you buy two books that are 50% off, you've just paid full price for them.
But we have two books.
Two guys. Damn. We split it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to get the free shipping. Come on now.
Man. Essentially bought one and you got one for free, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Listen, I just got to the two panels with Captain America, and the Avengers have just shown up, and it's like, there's a soldier with a voice that could command a god, and does. And Captain America starts ordering Thor around. Man, oh dang, this book runs again.
I'm glad we got it, because I'm sure that once that Daredevil show hits, we're going to be reading that on the program. And make sure that you don't miss that episode or any of the future episodes of The Last Comic Shop. You just have to rate, review, and subscribe over at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. It's a terrific website where you can find all of our episodes, past and present, all evergreen. You can listen to as many as you want, and make sure that you're also checking us out on YouTube, because we've got daily awesome videos in which we show comic book collections. We've got little clips of like 60 seconds of our show that if you just have just enough time to listen to just a couple fun things, check those out, as well as videos. So yeah, all of that stuff available on our website.
And while we may be the Last Comic Shop podcast, we don't want to be the last comic shop. So we encourage everybody out there to get out to your comic shops, ask them for Image's 8 Billion Genies by Charles Soule and Ryan Brown. Ask them for things like Clear, which, while it might be a Comixology original by Scott Snyder and Francis Manapole, maybe it has issues out, or maybe there's a collection soon. I read the Barnstormers whenever that came around in print edition, and that was great. Or maybe ask about The Wrong Earth, Night and Day, or the first volume of The Wrong Earth. Either one, Tom Pyre, Jamal Engel, they're doing great work out there on Ahoy Comics. Definitely worth your while. And then finally, I recommended The Daredevil Born Again by Miller Mazzucchelli. And oh, so good. So good. But all that and more waits for you at your local comic shop. Check them out. And then don't forget to circle back to our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where your wishes could come true by our merch store. What do we got this week, Jay?
Always have t-shirts, tote bags, coffee mugs. This week, genie pants. That's right, those billowy pink.
Don't purple. They call those hammer pants? Come on.
No, hammer pants are different.
Yeah, that was Will Smith, not MC Hammer. Come on.
Yes.
Now it's like the difference between Kazam and Shazam, and like
Sinbad can wear what he wants. As long as when the vampires come, he's faster than you. That's all that matters.
All right. Well, one thing that we hope that is faster than you may expect is more episodes of The Last Comic Shop. We'll be back next week. Until then, I was Lewis with the Most, Andy Larson. I'm joined by Jay Scott and Chad Smith. And remember to stay safe, stay springy. Yeah, because it's that time of year. Spring is here. And remember that the only genie you need is one of those ones that opens and shuts your garage door.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go with other famous genies. I thought we were going to call back the Invasion and the Gene Bomb. Maybe Yarmir Yager and his blue jean tuxedo.
That's not genie. That's the wrong kind of genies. That's genies.
It's covering his knees. It's genies. Genies. Hey, I can do bad jokes.
Who out there has their Yarmir Yager peanut butter lying around?
The Last Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.